the folks, pretty much everybody here, to discuss and participate in this hearing, and thank them for traveling here from Eureka and from other points that you've traveled from. We usually try to hear these items locally, and due to our state budget crisis, it's impacted our ability to hold meetings outside of Santa Rosa. So we apologize for that, but we thank you for coming down today. So with that, I'd like to call this hearing procedure to order, and this is the time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of a National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit and cease and desist order for Freshwater Tissue Company, Samoa Pulp Mill. This item has been properly noticed, and although there will be two separate votes today, one for the adoption of the NPDES permit and another for the CDO, there will be one hearing for both items. So will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you'll tell the truth in this matter?
Yes. Right.
Thank you. And we will have a staff presentation followed by a discharger presentation and then comments from the public. So with that, I'd like to start with the staff presentation. Good morning, Mr. Reed.
Good morning. And away we go. So give me a moment, please. I get situated here. Pointer is top. Okay. You'd think I know this by now, but well, good morning, Chairman Hills, members of the board. I am Charles Reed, staff engineer here at the Water Board, and I'll be giving the staff presentation for the proposed NPDES permit and cease and desist order for Freshwater Tissue Company Samoa Pulp Mill. These orders are included in items 4 and 5 in your agenda package. I will discuss both orders in this presentation, but following the public comment, you'll be voting on each order separately. The board members should have received an agenda package earlier this month containing the Executive Officer Summary Report, the draft permit, comment letters from both public drafts of the permit, and staff responses to comments on the first draft of the permit. Late last week, the board members should have received the staff report discussing both of today's items. And this morning, you would have received the final draft cease and desist order that was revised as late as yesterday. And I'd like to introduce the file into the record. As an overview of today's presentation, I'll be orienting the board to the location of the mill, providing you some of the site features, and providing you a description of the facility. I'll be briefly going through a chronology of recent events, but the bulk of my presentation, I'll be walking you through the staff report that you received recently. This will include requirements in the permit and the cease and desist order, significant permit comments and our responses to those comments, changes made to the orders in response to the comments, and details of the proposed cease and desist order. The community of Samoa is located in Humboldt County. The city of the pulp mill is located right here on the Samoa Peninsula. Across the Humboldt Bay is Eureka, and to the left in this slide is Pacific Ocean. This aerial photo of the pulp mill was taken in 2005 and shows the layout of the mill. And this is the location of when the mill begins operating in, where they'll be storing wood chips. The bleach plant and the brown stock area is in this location. The pulp and liquor processing area is right in here. These large buildings are pulp storage warehouses. And the water treatment plant is right here, which will figure prominently in the presentation later. The water treatment plant accepts water from the Mad River, which is located about 15 miles north of the pulp mill. The water from the that's entrained in the Mad River water is removed, and the liquid used for pulp processing and the underflow, which is a solid slurry, is discharged to the ocean through the ocean outfall. Processed wastewater from the mill is discharged also through the ocean outfall, and the terminus of this outfall structure is about 1.5 miles out at a depth of about 75 feet. The design flow of the facility is 20 million gallons per day. And this outfall, I should mention, is also shared currently with Fairhaven Power Plant, which is located a few, about a half mile south in this direction of this facility. So it's kind of a busy slide, but I'll give you just a brief overview of what happens at this the pulp mill as far as pulp processing goes and energy recovery. It's a fairly complicated process, so I'll just go through it fairly quickly. So the pulp mill uses a Kraft process to convert wood residuals into wood pulp. The process involves chemical digestion of the wood chips to dissolve the chemical bonds between the lignin and cellulose in the wood to produce the pulp. The digested pulp is then washed to separate the pulp from the pulping chemicals, and the wood waste is either and wood waste and the and is either sold as brown stock or bleached to produce a brighter end product. A key feature of the Kraft process is the recovery and recycling of pulping chemicals to create an essentially closed-loop chemical system. Until 1995, the pulp mill produced bleached Kraft pulp using elemental chlorine as a bleaching agent. However, elemental chlorine comes significant environmental threats due to effluent toxicity and toxic compounds, such as dioxin in the effluent discharge, and the inherent safety hazard from the storage of large volumes of liquid chlorine. In response to these threats, the mill owner in 1995 switched to totally chlorine-free bleach process to reduce the effluent toxicity and eliminate the threat of accidental chlorine releases to the community. From 2005 to 2007, the pulp mill produced exclusively unbleached pulp for shipment to Asia. In January 2008, TCF bleached process went back online in response to market conditions, and both bleached and unbleached pulps were produced in 2008. Effluent limitation guidelines for Kraft mills require limits for BOD, suspended solids, pH, and adsorbable and AOX for bleached pulp. Excuse me. A little further away? Okay. For the first 3 years of the permit term, the Samoa pulp mill will rely on internal process controls to meet effluent limitations based on these effluent limit guidelines rather than the end of the pipe treatment, which is common for the industry and has been relied on for the previous years of operation. So the pulp mill has quite a long history, having first opened in 1965. I've summarized this history for the board during the hearing to terminate the permit back in 2009. And at the March hearing of this year in Eureka, where I updated the board on the status of the permit development for the mill. This slide here presents a chronology beginning on the date that the previous owner, Evergreen Pulp Mill, Evergreen Pulp Incorporated, ceased operation of the mill. And that occurred in October of 2008. Shortly thereafter, the pulp mill was acquired by a company that at the time went by Samoa Acquisition Corporation. It has changed names a couple times and now is known as Freshwater Tissue Company. In April 2009, the board terminated the MPDES permit for the pulp mill. The reasons stated at the time were that the permit was outdated, compliance record was poor, and we wanted to prevent the automatic transfer of the permit to the new owner in a state where it was pretty obvious that the discharge could no longer comply with the permit. In December 2009, we received an email from Bob Simpson at Freshwater Tissue Company informing staff of their intent to reopen the mill. And at that time, they requested a new NPDES permit to perform pre-production maintenance and inspection activities. And they were expecting to resume full operation of the mill in late 2010. In January 2010, Freshwater Tissue Company submitted a report of waste discharge to the Water Board. In March, after quite a lot of conversations with the with FTC, we were able to draft a permit and made that available for comment from March 30th through April 30th of 2010. Shortly thereafter, a cease and desist order was prepared and made available from April 22nd to May 13th. The permit was recirculated in response to comments from a period from May 28th to June 29th. And for similar reasons, in response to comments, a cease and desist order was revised and recirculated in June 29th, and that period closed just last Friday. And June 15th is today, our hearing date, where we're going to give you a chance to consider whether to adopt the permit and the cease and desist order. The draft permit released for public review on March 30th included many of the requirements in the previous permit for the pulp mill, but also included new requirements and effluent limitations. Some of the continuing requirements was the authorization to discharge water from maintenance activities. That was included in the last permit and is included in this one as well. Also carrying over were technology-based effluent limits for BOD, suspended solids, pH, and AOX, which were in the last permit and are based on effluent limit guidelines for bleached pulp production. What's new in this permit are technology-based effluent limits for BOD, suspended solids, and pH that applied when the pulp mill is producing unbleached pulp. Now, this is new. This is new to the to this permit. I explained the history of the effluent limitation guidelines and how they apply to the board at the status update in March. I won't repeat that here because it was fairly lengthy. But staff has determined that that when the pulp mill is producing unbleached pulp, it should be subject to effluent limit guidelines for that apply to unbleached pulp production. So in addition to these technology-based effluent limits, a reasonable potential analysis conducted by staff determined that there was reasonable potential to exceed water quality objectives for some toxic pollutants. And the results of the reasonable potential analysis resulted in water quality-based effluent limits for aldrin, HCH, DDT, and dioxin. The permit also includes monitoring requirements to demonstrate compliance with these new technology-based and water quality-based effluent limits. Also new to this permit, but not totally new to the pulp mill, is an extensive receiving water monitoring requirement. They last did a similar breadth of study in 1997. And this permit requires them to do it twice during the permit cycle. So we can see what's changed since 1997 and to get a better feel for what's happening in the receiving water. Staff received comments on the April 2010 draft permit from Freshwater Tissue Company, Humboldt Baykeeper, and members of the public. Freshwater Tissue Company, their comments were primarily in the April 2010 draft were the most significant comments revolved around our reasonable potential analysis that determined reasonable potential for the pesticides and dioxin and the monitoring frequencies in the permit for those toxic pollutants. There were also some questions about toxicity requirements, specifically our requirements for toxicity reduction evaluations. There were other requests regarding the extent and frequency of receiving water monitoring, but the most significant comment received during this comment period from Freshwater Tissue was a requirement in the draft permit that was incorrectly put in the permit. The requirement was that suspended solids removed from the water treatment plant should be added to the amount of suspended solids from the process wastewater system for determining compliance with effluent limit guidelines. We coordinated with US EPA to resolve the issue. And the correspondence between staff and US EPA on this issue is included in attachment one to the staff report. We also received some comments from Humboldt Baykeeper. Their comments centered around dioxin. One concern was the mobilization of dioxin, the potential for mobilization of dioxin during the construction phase of the wastewater treatment plant that is I'll be talking about later that's being proposed. They also had some questions, specific questions about monitoring of dioxin in the effluent, and wanted to make sure that the permit was clear and aggressive at monitoring for bioaccumulation of dioxin in aquatic species of commercial interest. We also received some comments from the public. Most of the comments were objections to issuance of the permit based on the facility's past poor compliance history and the belief and expectation that the mill would not be complying in the future. Many of the comment letters, I'm sure you've read those, also detailed health issues that some of the local residents had claimed were as a result of living in proximity to the pulp mill. So in the course of responding to comments and through discussions with EPA and open and ocean standards units at the State Water Board, some new issues arose after the close of the comment period related to the regulation of the facility that required investigation and a final solution. Correspondence related to this issue is included in attachment two of the staff report. And the new issues revolved around an ocean plan exception that was granted to the Louisiana Pacific and the pulp mill in 1987. What the exception did was gave the pulp mill an exception from having to meet standards in the ocean plan for removal of suspended solids. In place of this standard, the previous permits had a best professional judgment based standard for suspended a mass emission of suspended solids. So in our conversations with the state board, the issue came up whether this ocean plan exception was still valid. It appeared from the perspective of the state board that the ocean plan exception only applied to Louisiana Pacific, was not transferable to any new owner, and did not follow the mill. We spoke at a great length with State Board on this, and it was finally resolved that it wasn't clear that the exception was limited to Louisiana Pacific. So Regional Board staff at this time determined that the ocean plan exception was still valid, still in effect for suspended solids. But what this did was require us to take a closer look at the exception and to try to discover to what extent the exception extended. Was it only for suspended solids, or was it for the rest of the ocean plan, Table A, Table B standards? So ultimately we decided that because the exception was fairly specific, and it didn't explicitly list any other exceptions to ocean plan criteria, Table A or Table B, that it was going to be only limited to suspended solids. So at that time, we revised the draft permit, to include requirements in the ocean plan for Table A and Table B constituents. And specifically, that resulted in changes to the following, resulted in the following changes to the 2010 draft permit. Technology-based effluent limits for oil and grease, settleable solids, turbidity and pH, water quality-based effluent limits for metals, pesticides and dioxins, additional monitoring requirements for Table B, for all Table B constituents from the water treatment plant. And what we also did was add a reopener to the permit that would allow us to add new water quality-based effluent limits if monitoring showed reasonable potential for any of these constituents in Table B that were had reasonable potential to exceed water quality objectives. What we also did, recognizing that some of these constituents may not be, that further monitoring may reveal that some of these constituents are not in the effluent, we include a provision to automatically reduce monitoring if monitoring shows that they're not present. So these changes to the April 2010 draft permit were determined by staff to be significant enough to warrant postponement of the June 10th hearing to today's hearing, to provide the public an opportunity to comment on the proposed changes. But before the close of 30-day comment period for the April 2010 draft agenda, we were contacted by EPA, who expressed some concerns that about whether the permit was properly addressing the combination of stormwater and process water for determining compliance with effluent guidelines for the process wastewater. We pass along this concern to Freshwater Tissue Company, and they submitted comments to EPA expressing their rationale why commingling the stormwater and process water did not materially affect determining wastewater compliance with effluent limit guidelines. This letter from Freshwater to EPA is included as attachment 3 to the staff report. A peripheral issue that arose during this conversation was whether the effluent limitation for AOX was properly expressed in the permit. The issue was investigated by US EPA and resolved without a change to the draft permit. The email from US EPA is included as an attachment 4 to the staff report. I've fallen behind a slide here. So comments on the draft permit, this is the April 2010 draft permit, were received from US EPA, Freshwater Tissue Company, and the public. US EPA found that the draft permit correctly applied US EPA's National Effluent Limitation Guidelines to the pulp mill discharge. Freshwater Tissue Company suggested changes that were largely editorial in nature or provided a factual clarification to language in the permit. Comments from the public involved questions about specific permit provisions and an objection that the permit revision resulted in a less stringent permit. So, the permit you have for you today for consideration is the final NPDES permit, tentative NPDES permit, waste discharge requirements order number R1-2010-0033. And in summary, it contains technology-based effluent limitations for BOD, suspended solids, pH, and AOX, water quality-based effluent limits for Aldrin, HCH, DDT, and dioxin for the process wastewater. For the water treatment plant discharge, it contains effluent limits for oil and grease, soluble solids, turbidity, and pH, and water quality-based effluent limits for metals, pesticides, and dioxin. It also includes a fairly extensive receiving water monitoring requirement. That includes offshore monitoring, benthic monitoring, fish and invertebrate monitoring, and monitoring to determine whether bioaccumulative pollutants are accumulating in fish tissue in the vicinity of the outfall. As I mentioned earlier in the presentation, the pulp mill has historically relied on internal process controls to meet effluent limits for BOD and suspended solids instead of end-of-the-pipe secondary treatment, which is the industry standard. Monitoring data from 2005 to 2008 indicates that the mill, as currently designed and operated, is not able to consistently meet BOD limits when the mill is producing TCF bleached pulp or the new numerically lower effluent limits for BOD and suspended solids based on effluent limit guidelines for production of bleached pulp that apply when the mill is producing unbleached pulp. Freshwater Tissue Company confirmed that it's infeasible to immediately comply with these limitations and requested a compliance schedule that would provide time to construct a wastewater treatment plant that would enable Freshwater Tissue Company to comply with the effluent limits. Similarly, Freshwater Tissue Company indicated that it was also infeasible to comply with new effluent limits for settleable solids and turbidity that apply to the discharge from the water treatment plant, and has also requested a time schedule to investigate and implement a compliance solution. In accordance with Section 13301 of the Water Code, the Regional Water Board is authorized to issue a cease and desist order if it finds that a discharge of waste is taking place or threatening to take place in violation of requirements or waste discharge requirements prescribed by the board. And staff has prepared a cease and desist order to address these non-compliance issues. The requirements in the cease and desist order to comply with BOD and suspended solids limits for unbleached pulp production include a 36-month compliance schedule to give the discharger time to obtain local development permits, and for the design and construction of a conventional activated sludge wastewater treatment plant. The cease and desist order also includes performance-based effluent limitations for BOD and suspended solids that apply when the mill is producing unbleached pulp. The cease and desist order also provides protection from mandatory minimum penalties for violations of effluent limits for BOD and suspended solids, so long as the discharger complies with interim limitations and meets the so long as the discharger complies with interim limitations. The requirement in the cease and desist order to comply with settleable solids and turbidity limitations for the discharge of solids from the wastewater treatment plant include a 32-month compliance schedule to provide the discharger with time to investigate and implement control measures to remove solids from the water treatment plant or obtain regulatory relief through an expanded ocean plan exception from the Water Resources Control Board. The cease and desist order also includes interim limits for settleable solids and turbidity based on best professional judgment. And it also includes protection from mandatory minimum penalties as long as the discharge from the water treatment plant is in compliance with the interim limits. So staff received comments on the cease and desist order from the State Water Board or Office of Enforcement, from US EPA, and a member of the public. The Office of Enforcement had a number of suggestions that we've considered in some cases have revised a cease and desist order in response to them. Their first comment was in regard to a task in the cease and desist order, or in the compliance schedule in the cease and desist order, that requires the freshwater tissue company to provide a demonstration of financial assurance that they have enough money to operate the mill and complete the compliance project that is outlined in the cease and desist order. The Office of Enforcement was concerned that we weren't specific enough in the permit about what kind of financial assurance mechanism we would be using. We responded that the circumstances surrounding the reopening of the mill are unique, and the proposed financial assurance was adequate in this case. It had to be acceptable to the executive officer, and we elected not to make any changes to the cease and desist order in response to this question. Office of Enforcement also suggested that the record for this hearing support the finding that the compliance schedule was as short as practicable. We responded that the compliance schedule was submitted by Freshwater Tissue Company. We have determined that it's reasonable and as short as practicable. It's based on experience of the consulting engineering firm for Freshwater Tissue Company. And it's based on the consulting firm's familiarity with similar projects. And it properly accounts, in our estimation, for the uncertainties of obtaining local development permits. And again, no change was made to the cease and desist order in response to this comment. Office of Enforcement also suggested that the relationship between suspended solids and settable solids should be strengthened in the cease and desist order. If suspended solids were to be used as a surrogate for these constituents in the cease and desist order. Office Enforcement also suggested that the cease and desist order clearly indicate that a violation of a suspended solids limit would equate to violations for settable solids and turbidity. To this question, staff responded that in the absence of site-specific monitoring data, the interim limits that we set were adequate and appropriate. Language was also added of the sort that was requested by the Office of Enforcement to clearly indicate what constitutes a violation. Office of Enforcement also suggested revisions related to language for possible future enforcement actions that we might take in the event of noncompliance with a cease and desist order. And staff made those changes to the order. US EPA suggested that staff adjust the compliance schedules as needed to reflect progress that Freshwater has already made towards completing the tasks in the cease and desist order. We responded that it was our understanding that the project design was at approximately 30% completed, and additional work would wait until the permit was obtained and financing for the wastewater treatment plant were in place. U.S. EPA also advised staff that EPA expects that the regional board will promptly enforce if the milestones in the cease and desist order are not met. And staff noted the comment. Freshwater requested that the cease and desist order be revised to include a compliance schedule for oil and grease pH and the Table B effluent limitations. We didn't grant that request because there was no information provided to us that would allow us to set a compliance schedule and interim limits for these constituents. So in summary, the cease and desist order you have before you today is the final revision of cease and desist order number R1-2010-0039. And it contains time schedules and interim limits to achieve compliance with all requirements in the permit. It contains provisions that limit the exposure to mandatory minimal penalties as long as the discharge isn't compliant with interim limits. And it also includes an opportunity to revise milestone dates for just cause. So to conclude, staff believes that the permit is appropriate for the facility and complies with state and federal regulations. The facility cannot immediately comply with all permit conditions. A cease and desist order was prepared to provide the discharger time to comply with all the limits and requirements in the order. And that's going to conclude my presentation. I'll be happy to take any questions you may have.
Board member questions?
Yes, I wanted to ask, what is the DDT issue and how's that on a banned substance? I mean, does this process generate that, or is that really an upriver basin problem, or what's behind it, especially because we had a spike of sort of false positive some time ago, and I wonder what's generating the DDT interest, basically.
Well, I think we can let the discharger address that.
Okay.
I think our suspicion is that the it is a product of source water or storm water that perhaps enters a wastewater system. Could be potentially residual on chips, perhaps. I think if there are violations of the effluent limits, that would be something that the discharger would pursue. You know, what is the source of these toxic constituents? Because they, you know, given the way the mill is operated, they shouldn't be there, but they are. They have been detected numerous times. These aren't the result of a single hit.
Okay. And then I wanted to give you my general sense of understanding. Perhaps you can correct it if staff is different. we had to upgrade because basically the federal regulations, but the mixing zone area is extremely dynamic, and so really pH and BOD within an extremely small mixing zone take care of themselves. To me, the meat of the permit's really on the toxics, and then for the discharger, their biggest problem is going to be the suspended solids compliance. Is that sort of your general sense of this permit?
That's a fairly new development, actually. I think originally the pulp mill or the freshwater knew that their major hurdle was going to be compliance with BOD limits for unbleached pulp, and that is the reason for the construction of the wastewater treatment plant. As I explained in the presentation, in the course of reviewing the basis for the regulations in this permit, it became clear to us that the discharge from the water treatment plant had to be regulated under terms of the ocean plan. And that was something that we didn't anticipate until very recently, and I don't think the freshwater tissue anticipated this either. And that could provide a hurdle for them to overcome. The technology is definitely there to be able to comply with this, but we'll see what they come up with. That's part of the time schedule, is to allow them an opportunity to investigate a little further what the potential treatment scenarios are, where if they're going to dewater the solids and remove them, where it's going to go. That might be the largest hurdle.
Thank you. Any other questions? Great. Thank you, Charles. Mr. Simpson, assume we have a presentation from you.
I don't have a PowerPoint, but I do have a short presentation. My name is David Cook. I'm an attorney for Freshwater Tissue. I'd like to introduce the other folks from Freshwater who may speak today, but they may not, depending upon any questions the board may have. Excuse me. Bob Simpson is the president of Freshwater Tissue, and the is he the reason we're here today? Yeah, I guess he is. Bob is here. next to him is Charles Benbow, also an official with Freshwater Tissue, and Tony Yeagle, who you may recognize from years past at this mill and other facilities from CH2M Hill, is also here. They've sworn in, and if there's questions that the board has of them, or if they want to volunteer some information, please ask them. I'm not a technical expert. I'm just a lawyer. I guess I should start by saying while this was It's never easy to take beatings, and it's never fun to take beatings. I want to commend the staff from Ms. Kuhlman, Ms. Niemeyer, Mr. Rivera, Mr. Short, Mr. Leland, and most of all, Mr. Reed, who's done all the heavy lifting here, for their extreme professionalism in coming up with this, with the permit and the cease and desist order. It's not been easy for anybody. It's been a pleasure to work with them, even as we have taken our beatings. So I just wanted to start by saying that. When Evergreen Pulp, the former owner, shut down the mill in October of 2008, almost instantaneously, over 200 jobs in the Eureka area, good-paying union jobs, were lost. A great number of indirect jobs indirectly related to the operations of the mill, such as truckers and chip suppliers and so forth, they lost their jobs too, or their employment was cut way back. All the money that they would spend with the money they made from the mill in the Eureka economy dried up. The port of Eureka, which relies on at least 2.4 ships leaving per month, lost that ability, and they need 2.4 ships leaving per month in order to break even. They need the mill back in order for the port to remain alive. And it would be a terrible shame for that to break down. When the when Mr. Simpson and his group acquired the mill in from Evergreen in 2009, February of 2009, their initial plan was a little bit more grandiose than what we have in front of the board today, which was to convert the mill into an integrated facility that would make not only pulp but the final paper product, a tissue product. And that's why you may be wondering why the company's called Freshwater Tissue when it makes pulp. Well, that's the reason. The initial plan was to make tissue as well as pulp, and that's still a vision, but we can't do it because in this economy it's hard enough to finance anything, but it's certainly impossible to finance the tens of millions of dollars necessary to convert to a tissue mill. So that didn't happen. But nevertheless, we stepped back and we said, what can we do to revive this mill, bring back these jobs, restore the port, and get things cracking again? So we worked with the water board, and the end result is the permit that Mr. Reed has presented to you today. This is by far more stringent than any permit that's ever been issued to a pulp mill operator in California, certainly on the Samoa Peninsula. Mr. Corbett asked whether or not the BOD issues take care of themselves, and the big issue for freshwater tissue is going to be the solids. Well, we don't know, but the BOD remains a big issue. It's not a big issue. It's never been a big issue from an environmental standpoint because of the nature of the discharge and the location of the discharge. When it discharges into the open ocean, BOD with a 144-foot diffuser a mile and a half out, 110 feet below the surface of the water, it's gone. But the regulatory problem still remains, and so Freshwater has bit the bullet and said that it will install a wastewater treatment plant that will reduce the BOD in order to meet the regulatory issue, which has swirled around this mill for now for some 35 years. That doesn't solve the new issue of the ocean plan limit, having to do with the water treatment plant, and it's important to distinguish between the process wastewater from the pulp and recovery system, which makes the pulp, on the one hand, and the water treatment plant, which receives the water from the Mad River, cleans it up enough to use in the mill for pulp making, and then discharges the residue. It's essentially a different process. It's also being regulated, as Mr. Reed pointed out, for the very first time, and we don't know yet exactly what that's going to mean. But it's a part of this permit, and we need this permit, so we're going to deal with it. One of the possibilities is that we deal with it from a regulatory standpoint, and it's a possibility that at some time in the future we may come back to this board and report, hopefully, that we've solved the problem from a regulatory standpoint. Just by way of background, the state board issued an exception for suspended solids, suspended solids is one of the three solids parameters associated with the discharge. There's suspended solids, settleable solids and turbidity, and they all address the solids issue. A specific exemption was granted in 1987 for the suspended solids limit, and that's the one that's reflected in the permit, in the sense that there is not a suspended solids limit in the permit because that exception has been recognized. But the settleable solids and the turbidity limits remain in there, and as long as they're in there, they may as well have left the suspended solids limit in there for that matter, because it creates the same problem. Back away. Sorry about that. The our hope is that we will be able to persuade the state board to grant the same exception for settleable solids and turbidity that they actually granted to the mill in the 1970s, but it's not recognized now. That they would be able to grant the same exception for those because it really is addressing the same problem. That's not before the board today. The permit contains these limits. And it has a time schedule, and the CDO has a time schedule to meet them, and that's what we're going to have to deal with. We had originally expected to start operations after a 4 to 6 month period of maintenance operations, which would involve the discharge through the ocean outfall, among other things, by the end of the year. In this economy, it has been extremely difficult to secure the financing necessary for the restart of the mill. The wastewater treatment plant and dealing with the solids issue from the water treatment plant are not the only issues associated with startup. It's a very expensive proposition. We are in a recession, as you know. It's been in all the papers. We're still in it. Investors have been gun-shy about getting involved in any project. It is very difficult to place money in any project now. As recently as yesterday, when we were discussing this issue and reporting the very good news to investors, the investing target that we've got that was most farther along, that we had a hearing on a permit tomorrow, which is now today, they expressed that comments that have been received from regulatory agencies, not this one, from the State Board, from EPA, have made them wonder whether they should actually do this, whether or not, frankly, environmental regulatory requirements are simply too stringent in California to do business. We are anxiously and working diligently to persuade them that that isn't true, that this is still a place to do good business. As a result of those conversations, it became apparent that we are going to need another 90 days, we believe, to line up the financing necessary to get going on the maintenance work that's necessary to restart the mill. The cease and desist order that's presently before the board has the same time schedule in it that was discussed and arrived at by the staff some weeks ago now, I think, because this issue actually came up yesterday. We have discussed it with staff. And what we would like the board to do is to provide us under this schedule with an additional 90 days on the deadlines that appear in the time schedule in the order. But in order to ensure that there is not a single day additional of discharge associated with this extension, we will also commit that we will not discharge from the mill at that outfall for another 90 days as well. So what this would have the effect of doing is taking the time schedule for the process water limitations that's in the order and also the water treatment plant discharge that's in the order and just move everything back 90 days, including the very first gallon of discharge. So the number of days of discharge would be completely unaffected by this. But without this, we can't proceed because if the order were to be issued in exactly the form that it appears right now, violations would be inevitable because we wouldn't be able to meet the deadlines without the financing. So we need the board to please move the schedule back 90 days. And again, I want to emphasize, including the commencement of any discharge. We are hopeful that less than 90 days would be necessary. We've drafted some language that I provided to Ms. Niemeyer to put in the order itself to make this enforceable, that we would not commence discharge for 90 days as a, essentially as a quid pro quo for moving this entire schedule out 90 days. But if things go well and we can get started earlier, we would come back to the executive officer, report that, and presumably the schedule would be advanced again by the same number of days. This is quite important to us. Again, we can't proceed under the cease and desist order with the schedule that's in the copy that's in your packet right now, because we simply would find ourselves in violation almost immediately, and violations are unacceptable. So that's a very important request. We provided a copy, 15 copies, I think, to Ms. Niemeyer. It's redlined in a way that accepts all the changes that are reflected in the packet that the staff made, and the only changes you will see in there are the changes that we're requesting, which is the 90-day extensions. And if you wouldn't mind passing that, I can discuss the terms of it with you if you'd like. It's fairly simple. I don't know if 15 copies was enough, but that's what I've got. The changes, members of the board, begin on page 8, and you can see the red line. The only changes, there are no substantive changes. The compliance dates have been moved out 90 days. If the 90th day from the date that was in the draft order fell on a weekend or holiday, we gave ourselves until the following business day to meet it. Otherwise, they're all 90 days exactly. So this applies on page 8 and 9 to the schedule for meeting BOD and TSS for unbleached pulp, it also applies on page 9, the bottom of 9, to the schedule for meeting the settleable solids and turbidity limits from the water treatment plant discharge. It's all the same. There are a couple of references in the text of the draft order in paragraph 4, in paragraph 6. These are on page 10, and page 11, paragraph 6, to the final compliance dates that were in the original order. I've changed those accordingly. They match up with the 90-day table. And then I've added paragraph 9 at the bottom of page 11, which says, discharger shall not commence discharge prior to October 13th, 2010, which is 90 days from today. Except upon written notice to the executive officer, who may in such event revise the compliance schedule to advance the deadlines set forth therein by the number of days before October 13th, 2010, on which such discharge commences. And again, that means that if in the event that we're able to get this financing lined up in less than 90 days, we'd like to get started. We want to start spending that money, but we would need the executive officer's permission. Presumably she would say, okay, everything else gets moved back up, and that would be fine. There was a question about dioxin. I'm not the expert, other than to tell you that the mills process does not use dioxin, it won't. To our knowledge, it never has. If there's dioxin in the water, it must be, our view is it must be coming from the raw water from the Mad River and just simply passing through. But I'm going to ask our technical expert to address that if the board would like to hear about that. Other than that, I would like to answer any questions the board may have about this, either the permit or the cease and desist order, or of any other questions you may have for freshwater.
I don't particularly have a question so much to this for you, but I guess I want to address Ms. Niemeyer in terms of your comfort level with this, and in parallel Mr. Reed's as well, just to get legal opinion as well as staff opinion.
We reviewed it. What you have is what we had presented to you previously with the changes in the dates, and with paragraph 9 stating that they wouldn't discharge prior to October 13th, we believe that there's going to be no water quality impact by the change of the dates because they won't be discharging. They're not getting additional time to discharge prior to being able to comply. So I don't want to speak for staff, but from a legal point, I don't think that there's any problem with it.
Okay. Thank you.
If Charles wants to discuss.
Okay. Thank you. Any other board members? Yeah.
Yeah, I just have one to the discharges perhaps. There are different kinds of outfalls, and some of them require minimum flows, and some of them
give. Turn your mic on.
John,
there we go. I'll try again. Thank you. There are different kinds of outfalls. Some of them require minimum water flows to maintain structural integrity, and also some of them have dangers of sanding in. So can you explain your no discharge and whether this is those aren't problems with this outfall, or what's the situation on that?
Well, the no discharge would be exactly the same circumstance that it's been since the water was shut off from Humboldt Bay Municipal
right.
Water District. And so what we mean by no discharge is that there would not be a process wastewater discharge and there would not be a discharge from the water treatment plant until October 13th or an earlier date if the executive officer approves it. That's what we mean by no discharge.
Okay.
In terms of silting up of the outfall, I'm going to ask the technical people to address that.
Okay. There is one issue that we thought of with this, and that would just be that we'd want to recognize an exception for stormwater, you know, that there may be a discharge if it rained of stormwater. And so I don't know if we want to explicitly add that, but
that would be fine.
We recognize that
we can't stop it from raining.
Right. I think it needs to be very clear.
Okay,
that would be good.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any other board member questions?
Actually,
before?
Sorry. No. Kim, can I ask though? Is this facility covered with an industrial stormwater permit? Currently, I see
Mr. Reed's
yes.
nodding his head.
Can I also ask? Thank you, by the way, Mr. Cook, for the presentation and your staff here today, or Mr. Simpson and your staff here today. Can I ask, as you address this seems to me, even with plus 90 days, to be a fairly aggressive schedule to try and get this thing up and running. And can I know we're not the only player and regulatory agency that's involved within the reopening of this mill. So as you maybe address from here on, could you maybe elucidate or shed light on what is some of the other regulatory obligations, whether it be, because I see Air District in here, I assume you have planning and permitting with Humboldt County, probably Coastal Commission, that type of thing, and that comes to play here as
sure.
well.
Sure. There are two types, categories of factors to consider. One is the environmental regulatory issues that would have to deal with in order to start up, and that's one category, and that's where the Air District fits in. And the other is the environmental regulatory issues we have to deal with in order to build the treatment plant. Addressing the second ones first, yes, we will have to go through CEQA. We will have to get a development permit from the Humboldt County Development Authority. We'll have to deal with the Coastal Commission or its local program. So, yes, those are issues and hurdles that we're going to have to deal with. The schedule that we have is extremely aggressive. We were pushed very hard to come up with the most aggressive schedule we could. It was not a pleasant task to look forward knowing that we're going to have to do all these things, but that's the schedule we proposed. It's the schedule that was approved, and we will find a way. That's the permitting issues associated with the plant, which are not necessary in order to start up. With respect to the Air District, there is a Title V permit already in place, and it's been preserved by Freshwater. It was issued to Evergreen, the prior owner, but it's been preserved by Freshwater. So that permit is in place. We are in discussions with the Air District and also with the Environmental Protection Agency about a few additional issues that they would like to see addressed prior to startup. We don't see those as issues that are going to be deal killers for us at all. And the reason for that is the really, really big air issues associated with the operation of the mill were addressed by the prior owner from mainly in 2005 to 2007. So those are the big permitting issues, and we're fully cognizant of them.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I do have cards for Bob Simpson and Tony Yeagle. I didn't know if you had anything to add.
Yes, thank you. I will. I'll be brief. I just wanted. I've been taking some notes as we go through things. So,
Tony, can you introduce yourself real quick, please?
Yes, I'm Tony Yeagle with CH Tuam Hill, representing Freshwater Pulp. And just to address a couple of things that have come up during today's hearing, one was the issue of pesticides and the Aldrin DDT and dioxins. Dioxin is not a pesticide, but Mr. Corbett was correct in saying those things have been banned. There are no sources at the mill. There's no storage or use at the mill, nor has there been for many, many decades. And these things, because of historical use, have of course ended up in our environment, and they have been detected in the mill's effluent, which comes from the Mad River, and there's also a stormwater component to the discharge. So we really don't know why or where pesticides would be coming from on this site, but we also don't think that it's from the mill, and the mill's not the source. The reasonable potential analysis that was conducted by the regional board was done, you know, under the procedures that the state implementation plans require, and running through the numbers, you end up with these things being required to be monitored. They've been very low levels, and I think in the case of Aldrin, I think it was one detection, there wasn't a huge data set. But in any case, those things are not present at the mill. The process doesn't produce them, and we don't expect them to be in the effluent at all, even though the lab data says otherwise occasionally. The other thing I would address is the outfall question. Mr. Corbett raised the question about the outfall. You've obviously got some familiarity with the facility. That is an issue. And in the past, water has been run through the outfall to keep those ports open. Right now, freshwater is discharging stormwater through the outfall. There has not been any backup of water as a result of those discharges, and the neighboring Fairhaven Power Plant is discharging water through a separate NPDES permit into the same outfall, and they have a daily discharge, and that's continuing. So there is no processed water from the mill.
So that power plant discharge is sufficient to keep the ports open?
Well, the ports have not been inspected physically, so the ports are obviously open, yes. Whether or not there's been some siltation or impact of lower flows, that we don't know if that's the case or not.
Presumably higher discharges will just flush it out in the
presumably
ports.
Yes.
Okay.
And there's a lot of ports there, so if there were initial issues, you'd get higher velocities through some of the ports until everything got cleaned out.
How, just out of curiosity, are they set up in a linear fashion along that pipe, or is it all at an end of pipe with a multiple port sort of opening diffuser?
Yeah, there's a diffuser section of the pipe that's about 800 plus feet long, and along that 800 foot section there are 45 degree angled ports on either side of the pipe that are spaced evenly down that 800 foot section.
Thanks.
And lastly, to address some of the comments about BOD, that has been a longstanding issue. I just wanted to point out that, as David mentioned, we certainly appreciate the involvement of the board staff and all the folks here that worked on this permit. It's very complicated. Those complications are largely, if not entirely, administrative complications. BOD has been a regulatory issue for a long time. The mill's discharge itself, from a water quality standpoint, being the only totally chlorine-free mill in North America, has among the cleanest wastewater in the country, if not North America, as a result of those process improvements with respect to toxicity, color, odor, chemical oxygen demand, you know, dioxin, toxics, and down the list, it's one of the cleanest. Doesn't have a secondary treatment plant, therefore BOD is actually higher than a lot of those parameters. So I just wanted to, I know that Mr. Corbett, for example, has heard this from prior involvement with the mill, but for the benefit of those that may not be familiar with the issue, I thought I'd just state that that is where this facility is. The same regulatory issues are present that have been there for a while. Freshwater has made the commitment to comply by whatever means necessary, and those things have been incorporated into the permits. And I will answer any additional questions that anybody has.
Any other questions? Yep, John.
Oh, I just want to state for the record, I've never had an economic or representational interest in other regulatory proceedings.
That's correct.
Thank you for clearing that up with us.
Yeah, that's right. It was in a meeting much like this from long ago.
Great. Thank you, Tony.
Chairman Hales, before we move on to members of the public, there
yes.
was a letter from Freshwater Tissue's attorney dated July 13th that I don't think that you have a copy of, but it addressed some of the issues that were raised by the Office of Enforcement and EPA in their comments on the CDO, and I would recommend that we accept it into the record.
Okay.
Pass out the copy.
Okay. I trust this has largely been summarized in the testimony we heard this morning.
Yeah. And okay. Charles, I think, kind of incorporated some of the answers into when he was responding to the comments made by the Office of Enforcement. Much of what he was saying was also in this letter. So it provides a rationale for
okay.
for some of the changes that weren't made.
Okay. We'll accept it. Okay, thanks. excuse me, we'll move on to the public comments, and I've got two speaker cards, and we'll start with Carol Binder, and that followed by Zandra Manns.
Yes, I'm Carol Binder from Eureka. I live so that I could, well, they just took it down, but we're within the sight of that plume when it's running. I wanted to say that it says in the thing that there was only one public letter on the cease and desist order, and I wrote two, one on each of the versions of the thing, and I know Zandra also wrote one, so hopefully you have those somewhere.
We have them.
Good. Okay. We who live near the mill ask you to make fresh water meet environmental standards before they start up. Our attention was called to this issue by the fumes from the mill that made us sick. We had to breathe their chemicals every day. Also, there were frequent breakdowns that created toxic plumes. Despite the happy picture that Freshwater paints, the bulk of the mill is old. Since then, we have learned that the chemicals at the mill are also a danger to the ocean, and I want to call your attention to those, that there is a cleanup of that site going on, and that those wells are filled with chemicals. Most of which are cancer-causing, listed on the Prop 65 list. The BP oil spill has made us painfully aware that our oceans are not endless, and they should not be taken for granted. The pollution from the mill may not be black and gooey, but it will be damaging to the ocean just the same. I also have serious questions about the route the mill took on its way to becoming Freshwater Tissue Company. Worthy pick was, by the admission of Evergreen Pulp officials, a reorganization of Evergreen to avoid bankruptcy. That was the first group that took over Evergreen. Why wasn't the $900,000 debt of Evergreen taken care of when the company was sold? Does Freshwater have a relationship with Evergreen or Lee and Mann? Does David Tsang, the former chief executive officer of Evergreen, work at Freshwater? Who are the investors that will finance Freshwater's improvements? Won't the investors make the real decisions the mill, since as Freshwater has admitted they do not have the money? Who will pay Freshwater's fines? What I'm getting at here is it seems there's a history. Each new company says they are new and they're really concerned with the environment. Then they go on to, violate and violate and get fined. And then suddenly there's a reorganization, a new company that says they are new. So that's what I'm getting at. I also question the commitment of Freshwater Tissue Company to making environmental improvements. Bob Simpson has said a number of times that the problem is not the pollution, but the environmental standards. He has said that the BODs were not a problem because the ocean was big and it would dilute the pollution. In the July 8, 2010 letter to the board, Mr. Simpson complains, quote, such limits, and then dot, 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 have never before been included, unquote. It is no wonder that Freshwater complains about the regulations. In the past, the mill was given lots of chances, variances, reduced fines. There is doubt about the mill's ability to meet environmental standards, and this is a quote from Mr. Simpson. Freshwater has no reason to believe that the facility cannot comply with these other new limits, but it is also true that there is no data demonstrating that it can, unquote. Mr. Simpson doesn't think Freshwater should be fined for violations, quote, it would be inequitable for Freshwater to be exposed to mandatory minimum penalties for violation of these limitations, unquote. Clearly, all this seems contrary to the green image Freshwater tries to portray. And it seems that the mill really has the sense that they call the shots. It is hard not to see the parallels between what happened with BP Oil. BP Oil had a history of violations. They were given extra chances. After all, the economy needed the oil and the jobs. You know the rest. It may be way too late to protect the Gulf Coast, but we can still protect the Pacific Ocean and Humboldt Bay. Please vote no on this permit. And I want to add about the cease and desist. If I didn't know better and I just came in here, I would think, oh my goodness, you know, there are all these things that they have to do, and isn't this wonderful, and this is really going to protect us. Unfortunately, I've been to a lot of these meetings. I know those jobs are really held up as kind of a black mile to the community. And so I've seen, especially under Evergreen, they really called the shots. They said, oh, you know, we needed this way. And that's the way it was done. The pollution seems to come first and consequences come later. And I'm not sure if in the original cease and desist, and I may have read it wrong, if the chemicals also trigger the consequences for the cease and desist, because I'm really concerned about those cancer-causing chemicals that are out there. They're awfully close to that outfall, so always the danger of an accident. The cease and desist seems... it's going to be really hard to enforce, and I can picture, because I've seen, in my limited experience with this mill and sitting at those things, that dates become slippy slidey. Oh, we can't make that one. It's whatever, and then you get that, and meanwhile, there are letters going back and forth. There's a lot of time and money involved. I know just trying to keep up with this mill, it takes a lot of time, just reading the things that are on public information. It's a lot of, so you're going to be really, as the Office of Enforcement pointed out, you're going to be putting a lot of resources into this cease and desist and whatever. I've seen, found that the mill in general, especially under Evergreen, was very slippy slidey. We could sit there at the Wharfinger and know they were lying to us big time. Because they'd say, for instance, there were no black clouds, and that day they'd shut that mill down. The next day we would see those black clouds. So I really want to emphatically ask you just to say no to this permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Sandra Manns.
I'm Sandra Manson. I live right across the bay from the pulp mill as well. And there are numerous people who aren't here who would have liked to come. I just would like to mention them. People who couldn't come include those who, a few of them, are sick or couldn't afford the cost. It's even on the bus, it's $95 round trip, and we would have had to stay in a motel overnight to come to an early morning hearing. There are people in our neighborhood who suffer from diseases caused by the pulp mill, and people who have impaired immunities because they're on medication. I don't know if you know how Eureka is, but it's kind of a haven for people who have special needs, and there's a big government processing center for low-income, disabled, and homeless people. And many of these people are on medications that make them allergic to a lot of other things. And it's really incredible to see the suffering. And like Carol said, we got involved with this because of the air pollution originally. And the air permit has been just about granted based on it still being the same old one that was here. And so that's going to go through. The water quality is an issue for those of us who are concerned about the environment. And I'm a city and environmental planner, retired, who's been concerned with these issues for years. I've noticed that people come to Humboldt County, they think it's beautiful, and then they run into one of these plumes of air pollution, and they never come back again. Sure, we need the jobs for the pulp mill. Those are good jobs. Compared with the rest of Humboldt, but there's a whole industry that's neglected because of the bad air and water. Apparently, there's a lot of surfers who are affected by bad water in the area, and actually had lawsuits against the pulp mill. There's a lot of empty hotels in Eureka because nobody's going to come there for the same reasons. And then there's the issue of conservation of resources. Historically, Humboldt County has been a resource extraction economy. First, you take down the trees. When there's no more trees, no jobs. You fish. When there's no more fish, no jobs. So now we have the tan oaks. Let's take the tan oaks. And I don't really believe you're just going to take scraps from the tan oak industry. I think the whole tan oak tree, according to the EIR I looked at from the county, is going to be mashed up into pulp. Now, the tan oak was a sacred tree to the Native Americans. It has huge acorns that have been sustaining human and animal populations for years. We are really spreading our ignorance by calling this a waste tree and using it to make toilet paper. The Simpsons stated that toilet paper is a necessity of life. And we have to have it. There's recycled toilet paper. There are many countries around the world where they don't use toilet paper at all. People carry little buckets of water to the toilet with them, or they use leaves. We really have to rethink what we're doing on this planet and in America. Conservation of resources preserves jobs. What a wonderful tourist industry Eureka could have. People have said, without the pulp mill, we would have prosperity in Eureka and Humboldt. Then there are also impacts on wildlife, the gross ones on the entire ocean and its benthic organisms, plant life, and just the way it cleans the earth for us and the air. I have a real problem with the cease and desist order. The laws that have been beefed up in recent years have been done so by people who are really concerned about the environment and protecting it and protecting all life. And that's a trend that we should support. As Carol said, the permit seems to be kind of designed by the applicant telling people what they want. And the scofflaw mentality that once a permit were they won't have to meet the provisions for 3 years. And this isn't true in every state. California is different. We allow a cease and desist order to go in before something happens. And it's intended to allow an environmental improvement, not to allow environmental degradation. Finally, I'd like to say I'm really concerned about enforcement. This isn't the day when we have a lot of extra people around enforcing things. There was an air quality blowout in Blue Lake recently, and took a whole week for the air quality district to shut them down. People actually moved out of town to escape it. We don't want to have to wait for things like that to happen when there's a blowout or something poisoning people or the ocean. At the Planning Commission hearing in Eureka this week, they told us that the only enforcement that was going to be done in the Planning Department was going to be life safety. Any other kind of enforcement was probably going to be put on the back burner because they didn't have enough employees. And I suspect that that kind of enforcement is going to exist at the state and regional level as well. And I really don't believe that the mill is operating in a clean water quality way compared with other places. I know there are outstanding fines and fees that haven't been paid. So what's that all about? There's a lot of chemicals in our lives these days. And I just want to say I feel like it's incumbent upon you to support the laws that protect life on Earth from the impacts of these chemicals. I'm asking you to turn down the permit and the cease and desist order. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the last speaker card that I had. Jean, do you have any others? Okay. Does anybody else wish to speak on that? Thanks. Do we have any board member comments?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't have a comment, but I do have, I would give you a motion to postpone the adoption of this permit for 90 days with the understanding that both from the legal people and the staff that this is not going to cause any kind of a problem.
I think the proposal that is before you is to go ahead and adopt the permit and adopt the CDO with the new date changes. Is that what you're suggesting?
I would amend it that way, with the understanding that it essentially puts the effect of it, the real on the ground effect of it, by 90 days.
We need to have a separate vote on the CDO.
So we have, as Mr. Massey just proposed, we have the proposed order, which we will vote separately, and we would vote the CDO separately. And so, if I understand you, Mr. Massey, you're asking for both to adopt both with the as discussed with 90 days.
Affirmative, and if we need to separate them, I would give you a motion to do that.
Okay. We also, I wanted to offer again the for paragraph 9 of the CDO to add to the beginning of that paragraph that states that the discharger shall not commence discharge, to add in the beginning of that paragraph, except for discharges of stormwater, the discharger shall not commence discharge.
Okay, so I have a motion for to accept waste discharge requirement with the 90-day extension, and as just described by you for the stormwater.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
If I would recommend you adopt the permit first and then deal with the 90-day extension and the changes
on the CDO.
In the CDO.
Okay. I was mixing the two, sorry. As Ms. Coleman just summarized, I have a motion for the permit with the 90-day extension. No.
No.
Just the permit.
Would you like a five-minute break?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that. Upon Ms. Harris's suggestion, the board will take a 5-minute break so the chair can clear his head. Thank you. You know, we call quick 5-minute breaks and they become 10. That's a given. I always get nervous when I call a 10-minute break because that usually goes to about 25. So anyhow, thank you. And hopefully I gave everybody time to get up and stretch for a little while and allowed me to process and get in front of me what we need to talk about. So when we left off and I was thoroughly confused, I think we have it completely lined out right now. And so what we have right now, we obviously have two things we are voting on right now. One's the permit, one's the CDO. We're taking up the permit item first, which Mr. Massey has already given us a motion to adopt, I believe. Well, yes. Let's just back up, because you had also talked about the 90-day extension in that, which applies to the CDO only. So,
Mr. Chair, let me clarify that. I will give you a motion to adopt the permit at this point.
Okay.
I will second that.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you. So that's item 4. Now, item 5, which is our CDO, that also requires a roll call vote. And what we have in front of us, just so we're clear, is we have the most recent version of the CDO that was provided to us this morning by our staff. We also then have an agreed upon, or the proposed 90-day extension that has been proposed. We also have the new paragraph for item 9 that talks about no discharge shall take place. And staff has also asked for to amend that to include the stormwater coverage for that as well. So if I've captured all of those details, that's what we have in front of us with the CDO. Mr. Noren.
Can I add to that, please, Mr. Chair, that we include, I asked actually the applicant this morning about the process with other agencies, and there are CEQA processes coming, I would imagine, within this, and I would ask that we direct staff to be aware and contribute to as a interested agency into that CEQA process and the mitigations as they come forward. And that process also comes back to our board on a periodic basis, not to exceed 6 months, as we go through this CDO timeframe, either through the executive officer report or in some form, so that we stay informed of this process. Compliance here is all built into the CDO schedule. It is rigorous, it is tight, and it to me, this is kind of like NASA. It's failure is not an option on this thing, because it doesn't give much wiggle room. So compliance, when we give a, and I'm sorry to be going on here, but just from the standpoint that a CDO on this is giving something in my mind here. We're giving a runway here of compliance, but compliance is on you. And I would like to stay informed as a board of that process, and I would like our staff to be engaged as that process unfolds with the twists and turns that I think will come with it. So with that slight amendment.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Norm. So with that, I would entertain a motion.
So moved.
Okay, we'll take a roll call vote. Ms. Harris?
Yes.
Mr. Massey?
Aye.
Mr. Noren?
Aye.
Mr. Corbett?
Aye.
Ms. Dean?
Aye.
Myself? Aye. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for coming for that, and we appreciate your time and testimony.
Enjoy a pretty ride home.
Okay, thank you. Just needed that pause. We're moving into our information items. We've got items 6